Our Indianapolis International Airport is one of the crown jewels of this city, the new midfield terminal. Everyone who has come through the airport and all the events that we've had in the last several years have said this is the greatest airport that exists in the United States. It is the most modern airport. And so when people, you know, hear that things may not be going on positively or have concerns in our airport, in our crown jewel, it's like, wait a minute, our best room in the house, what's going on here? So I'm here out at the Indianapolis Airport with Bob Duncan. He is the interim CEO of the airport. Robert Thompson kind of knows some things about the finances, and my good friend James Keough is the director of HR and human resources at the airport. He used to be down at the Indianapolis Star, but now he's in a better place out here at the airport. Mr. Duncan, first of all, you know, it's a pleasure to be here at the airport. Let me first ask, as I came in, you know, your industry, the air industry, you know, is rapidly changing. As I was coming in, I was talking to a member of your staff. We were talking about Cincinnati, where several years ago, Cincinnati was a big hub for Delta Airlines. The airport was packed. And then all of a sudden, the industry changed. Delta changed up. Cincinnati's airport is hurting. How unpredictable now is the airline business?
When you say it's unpredictable, it is changing. And back in 1979, 1980, when deregulation was passed, all the commentators felt that at some point there was going to be major airline consolidations, where you would end up with three or four major carriers and three, four, five regional-type carriers. Maybe in the industry we call them low-cost carriers, and that is beginning to happen. In Cincinnati's case, Northwest and Delta merged. Well, Northwest had hubs in Memphis, Detroit. Delta, of course, had hubs in Cincinnati and Atlanta, and these are all within 300-400 miles of each other. And when the airlines merge, the obvious question is, do we need that many hubs that close together? Because airplanes flying at 500 miles an hour, that's actually like across the street. Mm-hmm. So Delta made the obvious decisions to de-hub some airports, and Cincinnati was one of those. My information that I'm drawing from memory is that Delta had approximately 600 flights a day out of Cincinnati. Now they're down to 150.
Ooh. And those kinds of things, that's what impacts airports. Because one of the misconceptions that people have about airports, and they've had it, Bobby, for years, people think that they're property tax dollars or their income tax dollars or their sales tax dollars goes to fund any airport that's out here, even a one this fine. But that's not the case. Every time... Kind of walk our listeners through the fact that every time a plane takes off from here or lands here, you're ringing a cash register, it's helping to operate this place.
Yes, the airport does not operate off of property tax revenues, local income tax, state income tax. It is a proprietary business, so we operate it as a business. Therefore, our sources of revenue are airline landing fees, airline space rental, concession rental, the parking garage revenue. All those various revenue sources are generate enough revenue to support the operation of the airport.
People also don't understand that an airport is an economic development engine, whether it's in Chicago or whether it's in Duluth. And correct me if I'm wrong, there are more flights out of Indianapolis International Airport that carry freight than carry people.
It's probably closer to 50-50, okay. Actually. FedEx runs about 60 flights a day out, and the passenger carriers run a similar amount, slightly more, because of the way they're scheduled. We have about 155 daily departures passenger-wise.
It has always been a struggle to try to convince airlines, even when there was a gazillion airlines, serving this country, to give Indianapolis, which, as in terms of the size of a city, is now the 11th largest city in the country. In terms of the size of a metropolitan area, it's around 29th or 30th. To get the airlines to give more direct service, more nonstop flights. But that really isn't, unless you're in like a huge metropolitan area, that's really not how the game works anymore.
Well, the game works with a hub-and-spoke system that the airlines find is far more efficient for their operations. Indianapolis is referred to as an O&D airport, and that stands for origination and destination. And the reason for that is on many of the direct flights that people would like, you can't get enough people going the same day to support a 150-seat airplane. So what the airlines do is they'll take several flights from various cities into their hub where they can fill up a 150-seat airplane to, say, go to the West Coast. And airlines now, like many businesses, always are looking for incentives. We're working very hard with a couple of airlines to try to get San Francisco service. And there's a good potential we'll get it, but the little caveat that goes with that is the airlines say, well, we want to guarantee that the service will be used. So that requires the business community to step up and say, we will use this service. And sometimes you have some of the major companies say that, and others won't commit. So we keep trying. We have members of our staff that are out traveling and visiting airlines, primarily to talk about the health of the city. Because even in this economic recession, Indianapolis sort of stayed steady, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the airport. We've had traffic reductions, but we're staying steady now. So with all these changes going on in the industry, we're actually pleased with that.
The fact that we have the most modern airport facility in this country right now, until another big city decides to redo their airport, we can accommodate all these new super planes, these super gigantic, what are they, 777, 787, these huge planes. Can we accommodate all of that, both on the freight side and on the passenger side?
We can certainly handle the 777. The Category 6 airplanes, we can get a modification of standards to take those on an occasional basis. But if one of the airlines started using a Category 6 airplane, and that's the like A380, 747-800, those type of aircraft, we would have to do some major modifications to the airfield to handle those on a regular scheduled basis. And should that event happen, we'll make that happen. But for right now, the 747-8 that we're getting with Cargolux twice a week coming from Germany, we have a modification of standards to let those operations occur.
With Bob Duncan, he's the interim CEO of the Indianapolis International Airport. Bob, you said earlier this is an entrepreneurial business. It's government, but it's not government. It's an entrepreneurial business. It's run like a business. Any major airport that I would go to, if I drove a mile, mile and a half, 2 miles off the airport property, I would see little satellite parking places where they say, hey, don't go and park at the airport for $10 a day. You can park over here for $8 a day, and we'll take you over to the terminal, no harm, no foul. Walk me through, because I've said to my listeners that I really didn't understand there's an entrepreneur who has gotten zoning approval to build an off-site parking lot right down the street in the Ameriplex area in Decatur Township. He's not asked the government for any subsidies. He's ready to pay property tax. He's ready to, you know, give back to the community in terms of being a tax-paying business here in the city. But you guys don't necessarily like the idea, and I've heard some things that you're trying to fight, you know, the opening of this satellite parking garage legally. Why, if we all believe here in Indianapolis in the free enterprise system and competition and let the best, entrepreneur win, why would our airport not be supportive of somebody trying to provide a service out here in Decatur Township?
As you recognized and as you stated, we operate on a governmental side because we're a statutory creature. Mm-hmm. But we also operate in a proprietary side. And our parking lots are the largest revenue producer in the airport, mm-hmm. quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at certainly trying to protect our own business interests like most businesses would do. and we viewed the actions that were taken with respect to the land use change that occurred on this particular parcel as not being in conformance with the statutory procedures that the Department of Metropolitan Development is required to follow. Therefore, we challenged the decision. It boils down to a procedural issue. The land use change, we believe, was actually an effective change of the zoning ordinance, and that zoning ordinance can only be changed by action of the City-County Council, and that's what the dispute is about.
So the dispute is not, hey, we can't stand the heat of competition. It is the rules of the game weren't played correctly?
That's our belief, because we have off-airport operator now in Indy Park Ride and Fly.
And I know this case is in court, so I know you can't go too much farther in that. Walk me through, and I know we've got Robert Thompson here, and he's got all kind of spreadsheets and other kind of things. Walk me through, because there were news stories that said the airport was losing money, and then there was a memo that was obtained by a local community activist in Decatur Township, published it on a website, a memo from your CFO to the employees here and at the airport saying, hey, don't believe what you're hearing in the media. We actually are making money. Is it a question of one part of your balance sheet, your books say you're making money, another part is saying, well, you're not making as much money because you got to enter in the mortgage payments, the debt service, and all that other kind of stuff?
Actually, the airport is financially solvent. There's no doubt about that. The rhetoric, I suppose, if you want to call it that started with an IBJ article about the airport's in dire straits. It lost $31 million on its operating revenues, so forth and so on. Really was a little bit of a misnomer, because that's all depreciation loss. And depreciation, like Ms. Stone used in her memo, was if you have a car, you know, as soon as you drive it off the lot, it's worth less. Well, that's essentially what's happening here. Our balance sheet required that we take $106 million of depreciation, and certainly Robert can explain the accounting aspect of that, but it all relates back to general accepted accounting principles. We don't do governmental accounting. A lot of government entities do governmental accounting. We do accounting like General Motors would do. We follow generally accepted accounting principles. So where it says you have to take a depreciation off your revenue side or off your balance sheet, we do that. And we not only do we have to depreciate our own assets, but because we have many tenants that have put improvements on the airport, mm-hmm. such as the former United Maintenance Base, two Federal Express maintenance hangars, the U.S. Postal Hub facilities, some of the corporate hangars, fixed base operators facilities, the Federal Express Hub. We have to depreciate those assets also, and we didn't build them. So that's the accounting nature. So we take $106 million, give or take a year, and we end up with this operating loss.
So, Robert, let me go from one Bob to Robert Thompson. So you're telling me that the United Airlines facility, which is now more than 20 years old, from an accounting standpoint, it has to be depreciated down because obviously it's worth less today than it would have been 20 years ago, because, you know, is that kind of how it works?
A fair way to say it? And we call those assets lessee financed improvements. Mm-hmm. So a lessee financed improvement is something that's constructed by somebody that's a user of this airport system, and we recognize those. So if you went back to the 2010 financial statements of the authority, you'd mm-hmm. see a very large recognition, which was the FedEx, the last expansion. Right. And that was $147 million. Mm-hmm. And the task that we have in finance at the airport is to present what the value of the airport system is. So that's what this story was based on, was looking at that picture of that includes all of those investments in the depreciation as it relates to even those assets.
But just in terms of as what Bob Duncan said, this place is solvent, because a lot of times people hear loss and they think, okay, is this Greece? Is this Ireland? Is this General Motors before the reorganization? That's not the case with this airport. We're not Greece. We're not General Motors before the reorganization. This place is not going to, you know, close up and airports have to go to Kokomo or anything.
Definitely not.
Bob Duncan, when this new terminal was built, they had set a goal, an aggressive goal of minority participation to far exceed what was then the standard under the Peterson administration, which was the 15%, I think 15% and 3%. And the veterans was not in there under that administration. Obviously, a terminal is built, so you don't need to spend the kind of dollars that are spent to build this wonderful facility that we're in. But the airport is still spending money, maybe not as much as it used to be. And there is some concern that the level of minority participation at the airport is going down from those historic levels during the construction of the new terminal, and maybe even going below the current city minimums of 15%. Talk to my audience about how strong is the commitment now of this airport to minority participation, realizing that we're not building a three-quarters of a billion-dollar terminal right now. Right now it's you know, maintain the plant, maintain what you're doing. But in maintaining it, there's a lot of products, goods, and services that could be provided by MBE businesses.
We have a very robust, in my opinion, MBE, WB outreach program. Of course, Corey Wilson, who is our supplier diversity director, is very focused on that. For each project that we have, he does set a minority goal for participation in those projects. Our overall goal, if I do this from memory, I think is 18% XBE, which encompasses everybody, mm-hmm. and 5% WBE. Mm-hmm. And we don't always achieve that 100% of the time, but we come reasonably close. And I can certainly send you down before your show today the actual numbers that Corey's reported.
Does the airport do events where potential minority businesses and vendors, you know, can touch base with the airport staff to find out opportunities that exist, or maybe there are new minority vendors in the marketplace, in the community, that may not know what opportunities exist at the airport?
Yes, we do. In particular, we certainly at Black Expo are going to have a job fair. Mm-hmm. We participate in that. But we're also sponsoring the Black Business Conference. Mm-hmm. During the EXO event, and Corey does go to those various opportunities, and other staff go with him. And certainly on our webpage, we post all the projects. All those projects would certainly have minority goals, and we ask people to certainly partner up with general contractors, or if they're in this supply that they can do themselves, to quote or bid as appropriate. Part of the difficulty that we have run into with some minority participation is sometimes bonding requirements that mm-hmm. the statutes require, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And we try to mentor people around that and assist with getting additional bonding if we can make influence that with a particular bonding company. And so, you know, I've been very proud of the efforts that the Airport Authority has made over the years.
Recently, the longest-serving African-American executive here at this airport had their position eliminated. Obviously, the previous director was here for a bit and left. Those two individuals happen to be African-American. I'm not going to ask about the specifics because I know you're not going to comment on them, and I'm going to respect personnel decisions. But let me go to a larger question. In an airport that is serving a city that is 28% African American, that is serving a city where racial minorities, including Hispanics, comprise nearly 40% of the city. The fact that other than your HR director, there is no high-ranking African-American in the executive staff of this airport. Does that concern you? Does that concern the board, A? And B, given two major African-American departures within a short amount of time, and the latter one, there was very little heads up. It took people by surprise. I think people knew the situation with the director. That kind of was had been brewing for a couple of months. So that came as no surprise. The other departure came as a surprise. In retrospect, should there have been some heads up to key African-American civic and political leaders of what was going on, and that this reorganization at the airport could take, you know, reduce the level of high-ranking minorities here at this facility?
One of the problems with giving the heads up that you suggest is the potential that the person affected is going to hear it outside of, in this case, myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that is disrespectful to the particular individual, that they need to hear it first from management and the basis of the decision, rather than sending a notice to whoever, and have that particularly come back to the individual before myself or James had the opportunity to speak with them.
That I agree with. I definitely agree with that. But after the individuals, you know, had been notified and all the I's and the T's were dotted, there's always a gap between when that happens and when that gets out publicly. Should there have been, after those individuals had been properly notified and things done the right way, there had been some heads up so that people didn't hear about it 2 or 3 days later in the media?
Well, that is another difficult point. We don't publicize those type of staff changes. We don't send out news releases of personnel changes. And we didn't suggest anything to the media. The media picked it up. And we actually were a little bit disheartened when it got some play with pictures and all that on TV, because we didn't think that that was really a very good way for these people to experience, because these folks were talented folks, and just because of the staff reorganization, the entire reorganization of the airport, it wasn't just the African-American employees that positions were eliminated. There were three Caucasians positions that were also eliminated. So this was not anywhere geared at any particular racial demographic.
As you look down the road here at this airport, and as I walked in today, you know, obviously this airport was, this new terminal was built for growth. Before we turned our equipment on and started the interview, you kind of shared with me some pictures of the original airport that was opened up in the early 30s that would have been what used to be the old Concourse B and C in the old terminal, but that the people that designed that original airport kind of planned and aimed the runways and assumed that somewhere down the road air travel would be so great that we would need two runways running in the same direction parallel to each other. Is it reasonable to assume that maybe growth will come back, or are we looking at an airport where, because as I walked in, I could see one whole concourse of check-in gates that were basically empty. And people may come out here and say, well, my goodness, we built all this thing. Was it a waste of money? Was the investment not worth it?
This building and the airport is configured for a minimum of 50 years of potential expansion. The consolidation of the airlines has resulted in some of those vacant ticket spaces that you see. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I had a crystal ball to tell you how the airline industry is going to grow in the future, but one thing is certain. airlines will always serve the market that needs to travel. And as the economy improves and there's more business travel, more leisure travel, when those people have to go somewhere, there will be an airline there to serve that market. Right now, Indianapolis is a 60% leisure market. Most of our 3.7 million employments, 60% of those are leisure. Only 40% is business. Now, that's a percentage shift, which is unusual, particularly for this airport. We used to be 50-50.
So we need to get the business community to step to the plate.
We need the business community to travel, yes.
I'm going to send that particular quote to corporate to boost up the travel budget. Two other questions. We mentioned earlier when we were talking about depreciation and all that accounting stuff that puts people to sleep about the United Airlines facility. People may still think that that building exists, but it is empty. Isn't that a success story here at this airport as to how, after United pulled out and created that big empty building that we have found here in Indianapolis through your predecessors, and I'm sure you're going to work to help fill it up, to fill that building back up and make it productive?
The building is almost fully leased.
Almost fully? Really?
Yes, it is. AAR Aircraft Service does major maintenance over in the facility, very similar to what United did. Mm-hmm. A good portion of the building is leased by Express Scripts. Mm-hmm. There's one entire hangar bay, which is two hangars, actually. Mm-hmm. Which is leased by Republic Airlines, where they do maintenance on their aircraft. So the facility is being utilized and is on a break-even basis right now.
So you mean to tell me that somebody's medicine prescriptions could be coming from the old United Airlines maintenance facility?
Yes. Express Scripts runs the high-end, very expensive medicines for, you know, cancer patients, that sort of thing, and that's what they process out of the old United Maintenance Center.
So should we look at the success of turning the United Airlines maintenance facility from empty to full, where it's now at least breaking even, it's not draining on Mr. Thompson's balance sheets, into what will happen with the old terminal that's still sitting over there on the east side of the property?
Well, I like to tell the story about the old terminal. What is going to end up happening to it is going to become a playground for bulldozers. The building, parts of the building are 50, 55 years old. It's really not reusable. It's archaic. Systems in it were bad. And if you go inside that building today, it's a mess, and intentionally, because we understand that to redevelop that area, because it has 50 acres of airplane ramp in front of it, mm-hmm. that building has no useful purpose. So starting this year, we're going to start taking it down in sections, because it would be a very expensive proposition to take it all down at once, somewhere in the neighborhood of $11 or $12 million. So we're going to stage the demolition of the building over about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then that gives you essentially a green space again with 50 acres of airplane ramp, which provides a lot of opportunity for something. Now, we think cargo, but it could be something else. And I'm going to give you a really good example of forward thinking. 20 years ago, 1991, well, actually, 21 years ago now, we built a taxiway to nowhere. Mm-hmm. It connected with the current air, runway system, but it went nowhere. It was only 3,000 feet long. Mm-hmm. And next to that, and we knew the second long runway was going to be built, and then we'd extend that taxiway out. But we created a green space, and in the course of 1 year, that green space developed into the United States Postal Hub and the United facility, maintenance facility, because it was available. That's what we're looking to have happen at the old terminal.
Are there restrictions as to what could be built? there. And the reason, the restriction, when I say restrictions, noise restrictions and height restrictions. Height restrictions from the government in terms of, well, you can't have a 30-story building there when airplanes are coming over. Noise restrictions from the in the mind of the tenant who's saying, you know, Bob, I'd love to, you know, build a building over here where the old terminal was, but, you know, they probably airplanes will be there and it's probably going to be noisy and my employees will get upset and my coffee cup will rattle and that may not be the best thing.
My judgment would be anybody that wants to locate on a 50-acre airplane ramp is not going to have any difficulty with airport noise. I think your thesis is kind of entertaining, but mm-hmm. but the anybody that's going to locate on the airport has certainly a reason to be here. They need an aeronautical use. They need the access to the airport. So I don't think a noise would be a particular factor to them.
So it would be more cargo industrial as opposed to maybe hotel or office?
Well, there are two hotels over at the old terminal area now, and they've been there for, the Radisson was originally built in, the original building was built in 1961. And, of course, the Crowne Plaza over there has been a Holiday Inn for as long as I've been with the airport. And they still operate, and in the case of the Crowne Plaza, that's on the center line of the runway, and airplanes fly over it.
Is their business still as strong as when the terminal was right next to those hotels?
When I go over there, their parking lot look pretty, well used. Their actual numbers I don't have available.
The fact that you're coming back, the experience that you've had running this airport, now coming to the most modern airport in the country, because I think a lot of listeners really don't realize this is the most modern airport that exists now. Does that give you a sense of deja vu?
Well, you know, I retired from the airport on June 30th and then was asked to come back and fill this interim role. I actually enjoy this airport. This airport has been my life for my entire working period when I started off as staff attorney for the airport. I couldn't think of a better thing to do, so I was very glad to come out of retirement and be back here. I'm just that enthused about it.
Bob Duncan, the interim CEO of the airport, he knows a lot of history. Probably could tell me, you know, chapter and verse of every runway, everything, probably where the airplanes have to hold before they come here and land. James Keogh, Robert Thompson, guys, thanks very much for being with us.
Appreciate it, Amos. Thank you for coming out.